Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay. 245. The Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature. O Arjuna, become transcendental to these three modes. Be free from all dualities and all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the self. Right, so here, continue with this, is that one gets freed from the bondage of works. The one above that. By this process, the devotee is liberated from all mundane influence, and only in this state of purity can be situated in spiritual nature. So here, then, another aspect of that being freed from gain and safety. Right. So gain will be your prayojana, material prayojana. Safety will be your material sambandha. Right? Because your gain and safety is for yourself. But if we're connected to Krishna, then our gain and safety is connected to Him. We're simply acting so that He gets results. Right? Because the soul is eternal, so technically there is no need of safety. Safety means that we're Krishna conscious. So that the thing we're worried about is dropping out of Krishna consciousness. Right? That's dangerous. But otherwise, nothing else technically is dangerous for the soul. Yes.
I was always wondering, this the Sanskrit is yoga kshema, adhavan. And why is it word yoga? Can you shed any light on why yoga is also translated as gain?
As gain.
Gain, yeah.
If it's in that, if that's what it means, because it means connection. So the thing is the yoga connection is, what we're worried about is connection with the Lord. But you can also, means, we call the Ashtanga Yoga system yoga, you know, because of its connection with the Lord, but at the same time, you can use it to connect to something material. You know what I'm saying? Mystic cities or, you know, good health or stuff like that. So they're using it like that. Like today, the modern, yoga is very popular today, but it's only popular because of health considerations or peace of mind. And peace of mind simply means that the mind is not so disturbed from the day-to-day grind. And then as soon as it's peaceful for a little while that you feel comfortable again, then you go right back into the fray. They're not talking about coming peaceful like that and then not doing the activities that create that. Right? You know, they're not talking about you get your health together so that you can just then focus on spiritual life. Right? You know, that's not what they're... So it's only because it creates some facility, right? It makes the body in good shape and makes the mind in good shape. That's the only reason. That's the only reason it's popular. So it's not that they're getting closer to the spiritual. No, all it is that they're more... Situations that we would put ourselves into are not as foreign to them as before. But the idea of being actually spiritual, that's not. But at the same time, they will call it spiritual. So then in their mind, it is a similar thing. You know what I'm saying? You know, just like we're saying, the children may think we're not playing. We're just being Krishna conscious. So technically they are in their own way. But they're still playing. You know, so they think they're being spiritual, but it's not exactly.
The state of mind that one thinks about, like Prahlad Maharaj, he considered himself not plain, but actually he did. So what's the objective observation? Like, I can see myself being totally Krishna conscious, and for somebody who is whose level is above mine, he will see that I'm completely nuts.
Yeah. So, you're having that problem in the house.
No, but you know that if we take our observation as criteria, it's not practical then.
No, it's not practical, but the point is means there should be the element, at least you should be satisfied that you're fully engaged. Because if you think you're not fully engaged, there's a good chance you're not. But if you think you're fully engaged means as far as you're conscious of. See, what the difficulty is what you're not conscious of. You know what I'm saying? So that, in other words, you're, as far as your consciousness goes, you're fully absorbed. But then someone else, by observing, can see, well, these areas you're not conscious of. Therefore, if you're not conscious, how you'll be Krishna conscious? Right, so that's why association with devotees is so important. Because that then we see what they do in that. So even if someone doesn't say, then by association with time we'll notice things that they do that we will then understand we don't do. Or maybe we're doing but not as well as they are. Is that okay? So that's why association is important. I mean, self-satisfaction is one of the elements. But the point is that self-satisfaction should be based on authority, right? So even if we're looking at it from, you know, our perspective, we're looking at it to see if we're up to the standard, but it should be that what we're looking at is authorized by Guru Sadhu Shastra. So if we make up our own system and then feel, yes, I'm very absorbed in that, our own made-up system, then that's not very useful. But if it's the system as given by the Acharyas, and then we are nicely absorbed in that, then that's the best that we try to do. But then with the practice, then Krishna will reveal where there's a weakness or through others like that. And so we'll just gradually move forward. Okay. Yeah. But self-satisfaction is one of the points. Right? But then that one has to be aware of oneself to be able to be self-satisfied. Right. Self meaning the soul. Okay. By Krishna consciousness, one can overcome dualities. As long as the material body exists, there are actions and reactions in the material modes. Right. So that's going to be there. Right? It's not that you become a devotee, there is no action or reaction in the material modes, because the body is made of the modes. So even its functioning is a reaction of the modes. Right? One has to learn tolerance in the face of duality, such as happiness and distress, or cold and warm. So we're saying that that's going to happen. There will be happy situations, not happy, cold and warm situations, yes.
Could you elaborate on the body is made of the modes?
Body's made of the modes.
Are there parts of the body that are predominantly in passion or in, I mean, I'm not sure exactly how to, what to make of it.
Means made of the modes means the modes control it.
Yeah. So it's, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So they're controlling everything that's there.
But the modes are like Brahman or all pervading, right?
Yeah. It's just like your arm is moving. What moves your arm?
Passion. I don't know.
No, but that's mechanically. What moves your arm?
My soul. My mind.
Your soul.
My soul has a desire.
Okay, no, let's start at the other end. Okay, we can start from that end. Okay, the soul has a desire. Then?
Okay, so...
You want to move your arm.
Yes, so my mind sends a signal to...
No, before that, then?
The intelligence?
No. Before that, that means... Is it sanctioned or not for you
it's
to move your arm?
Sanctioned by the Paramatma.
Okay, and then once he sanctioned it, then who
the
takes
modes.
Care of it? The modes.
The modes.
Okay. And then?
The arm moves.
But what about the mechanics in between?
the signals go from the brain to the arm?
Okay, well, that's the fire. Okay. But what about before that?
See, this is why I asked the question.
Means it moves because of the life air.
Okay.
But we'll attribute it to the muscle, and then that to the you know, the electrical pulse coming through the nerves, coming from the brain. But it's because the air is pushing. Therefore, that's the mechanics that the air uses to make it happen. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Right. Just like, let's say you have on your car, you have hydraulic brakes. Mm-hmm. So actually, it's the air that is stopping the car. Yeah. But the air pushes on the piston, that pushes on this, that pushes on that, then finally, you know, it works the brake. You understand? Mm-hmm. But it's the air that makes it happen. So the body moves by air. You know? Okay. You understand?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
In that way, just as the air is moving the muscle, the modes are moving the air.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Much.
And your desire is then moving that.
Okay.
Or at least you want to desire. They're moving it. You just have the desire. So. But it's only because of your desire it is moving.
Great.
That's why Krishna, things are going on. We're not the doer, but at the same time, we're responsible.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Like that.
How do the modes move the air?
How do the modes move the air?
Where do they interface?
Where do they interface? That, I'm not sure. Not sure the exactly. When we get into Shankya stuff, then. Because that's all Shankya.
Because air is the material. It's one of the, you know, Panchamahabhuta.
Yeah, but it means the life airs.
Yeah.
Mm. Like that. So, I'm not sure. From what I understand, is air pushes on fire. You know, so air is a mode of goodness. Fire is a mode of passion. And then that eventually, you know, and the electrical pulses are passion. That pushes on the muscles, which are, you know, earth, which means ignorance. So basically that would be, from what I can understand. Does that make sense?
Before that, could the air be pushing the brain, and the brain then discharges all the other elements?
Could, but I'm not sure that it's so important that it's pushing the brain. It may be pushing the brain. So does that mean when you're pushing harder, there's more pushing in the brain? So actually, hard work is actually dangerous because it can flatten your brain or something like that. You know. So that's why the people who don't do much, they're more intelligent. You know. So is it that they're more intelligent, they don't do much, or because they don't do much, they're intelligent?
It's different sides of the same thing.
Same thing, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Is the intellectual more intelligent because he was intelligent, therefore he's not doing anything, or because he's not doing anything, that's why he's more intelligent? Other people that do more things, their brain gets flattened, so therefore they're not as sharp.
No, they don't use their brain, so it gets kind of, you know, you don't use something for a long time.
Oh, okay.
Then it doesn't get worn out.
Okay, yeah, no, he
is. Is the brain intelligence or the mind?
Huh?
Is the brain intelligence or is it the mind that has intelligence?
Neither. The intelligence is another thing. Mind, intelligence, false ego sit in the heart. Like that. That then, you know, the brain does the mechanics, that's all. It's not actually the thing that thinks. It's just you see the mechanics going on there. It's like, let's say you're using a calculator. Who's thinking? You are the calculator.
Yes.
You understand?
In a certain sense. In a certain sense, that's right.
No. Just stick to the obvious. Are you doing the thinking or the calculator?
Oh, on the calculator.
You are the calculator.
I'm doing the thinking, really.
Okay, so that's the whole point, is that the intelligence is doing the thinking, but it uses the brain like a calculator. So you see all the activity going on there. So the scientist notices the calculator and then says, oh, all this is going on, because without the calculator it won't come up in the numbers and all these things, and this pushes on there and this little goes through there and all these different things. But they don't understand the intelligence that's pushing the calculator.
Yes. But in itself, the calculator was made from intelligence itself. So,
No, but that's crossing. That's like saying, is that okay? Who's doing the cooking, right? The person, the cook, or the spoon? And you're going, yeah, but the spoon was made by someone else's intelligence. So it's actually that guy in the metal shop around the corner. He's doing the cooking. You understand? You have to stay within the same context. You can't mix the contexts. You know what I'm saying? Okay. One has to learn to tolerate learn tolerance in the face of dualities such as happiness and distress or cold and warmth. And by tolerating such dualities, become free from anxieties regarding gain and loss. Right? Because the dualities, things are coming up and down, right? Getting better, getting worse, right? So then one is not worried about gain and loss. Because the point is things come and go anyway. That's just the way it works.
It's not yours anyway.
Yeah, it's not ours. It's just we can take part in the process. So it's not a matter of we have facility, which is our conditioned nature, and we use that in Krishna's service. That's what we're trying to do. So now that things go nicely or not nicely, that's not the anxiety we have for ourselves. We're only worried about it, that the results for Krishna, so we want the better result for Krishna. So worrying about gain and safety means for ourselves. Right? But if we're worried about it doing it nice for Krishna, we don't call it gain and loss, we call it Krishna consciousness. Right? Means, let's say you're going along and things are developing, then something goes wrong and then there's some loss. So you don't sit around and go, oh, there's loss, this, that, and it's so bad. You just think, okay, how to correct this and make it work. Right? So it's not looked at as a loss. But if it's in our life, we'll say, I gained this, it was mine, and now I lost it. But the other way, in devotional service, because it's not yours, it's not a gain. It's just nice, it's come out nice for Krishna. And if there's a loss, you don't look at it as a loss because there was nothing of yours, nothing owned. It just means, okay, there'll be more work to get it back to what it was. You understand? So even though it's the same thing, because it changes into devotional service, then it doesn't use the same definitions. So we may feel as that it's a different process. Right? So we don't worry about gain or loss, so we don't worry about, you know, if things go nice for the deities or not nice for the deities, because we're not worried about gain or loss. Right? No, so things should go nice, but the gain and loss is not our gain or our loss. Like that. So we are just absorbed in devotional service. Yes.
I'm remembering in the ninth chapter, Krishna uses the exact same two words, yogakshema, when he says, I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. So is that preservation, the safety, and what they lack is the thing?
Yeah, could be. You could connect that. That's always a nice way of analyzing things, is through words. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you can take the words, and from that word here, you know, you find that where it's used somewhere else, like that. Like I've generally seen, I've only seen two persons really do that a lot. You know, Vida and Anamarsha do that, and Sautamarsha do that. Mm. They work off the words, you know, like that.
Gain and loss and Krishna consciousness, we don't look at this. Will it come automatically, or we have to practice this?
It's practice. I mean, it's all that. That's why it's sadhana bhakti. That's why it says one has to learn tolerance. So that means it's through practice. We get the knowledge and we practice it. Learn tolerance in the face of dualities such as happiness and stress means that while happiness and distress is coming, that's when we practice these things. But as long as the body's there, these things will come. Because that's just what the body does. Right? That's its occupational duty. Right? Yes.
It's interesting phenomenon that devotees, when it's their gain and loss, they fight like anything. And then if something, as you mentioned, you know, deity or festival, like, you know, obviously somebody made a mistake and then you come, and the devotees, they say, you know, it was Krishna's plan, and then, you know, yeah, we don't know what to say to this. You know, it's like they put all the, you know, they just like throwing all the responsibilities on Krishna, you know, and it's not our fault.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, so they're taking the down the worst of both perspectives. Because it should be they're trying to get the good for Krishna, and then what for themselves, it's just whatever Krishna's plan. So the gain and loss
they
for themselves, yeah. So, but that's the mode of ignorance. The mode of ignorance always turns everything around, right? So in other words, if the Shastra says one thing and we have a 180 degree perspective, there's a good chance we're looking through the
spectacles.
Yeah, the spectacles of the mode of ignorance. You know, like that. That's like that. If the method is the same, but whose result it is different, then that's passion. Right? Because mode of passion uses correct methods, but the result is for the wrong person. Right? And mode of goodness, then they're both correct. Right? So mode of goodness, action is correct, and the you know, the perspective is correct. The mode of passion is the action is correct, but the perspective is wrong. The mode of ignorance is perspective and action is wrong. So you're doing actually opposite of what you should be doing. And then when you don't get the result, then you become more extreme in doing the opposite. You know? And so then it just gets worse and worse, and they become more and more extreme. This transcendental position is achieved in full Krishna consciousness when one is fully dependent on the goodwill of Krishna. So it says achieved means it's a practice. Right? So it's achieved when one is fully dependent. So as long as we're thinking, I'll do it, and it's mine, then there'll always be a disturbance by these dualities. But as soon as we're fully dependent on Krishna, it's just that whatever happens, it's not... Because we know that the person is taking care. You know, it's not like the child is not so worried. You know, the mother's taking care, but then if something's not nice, then they'll cry. If it's something nice, they're happy. So they're affected by happiness and distress. But this is where they're in knowledge, so they know they're taking care. So therefore, if it's not a nice situation, it's just the way it is. You know, you got to take your bath. It's just, you know, it is for your good. Or you have to take your medicine, or you have to eat later, not now, or, you know, stuff like that. So you have the understanding. Does that make sense? So you're not worried. Okay, Vritti. According to Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan, Arjuna now asks a question. How will this intelligence arise in one who must study all the Vedas? In one who must study all the Vedas? That study will take a long time, and there is thus possibility of diversion. Right? In other words, by understanding the Veda and the association of devotee, then you can come to this platform. But it'll take a long time to study all the Vedas. So what's going to happen in between? You know, we get distracted in between. What's to avoid that? Because you'll be fully, you're on the transcendental position when you're fully practiced at it. And you have that full knowledge. So what's going to happen in between? The Lord answers, from a large body of water, a person uses only as much water as he needs for bathing or drinking. He does not use the whole lake. In all the Vedas, including the Upanishads, whatever serves the goal of attainment of knowledge of Atma, that much alone is used by the person who studies the Vedas and desires knowledge of Atma. That makes sense? So that's the thing, according to one's nature, that much will be there. Like that. So only how much he requires is how much, because the point is to become Krishna conscious. So if a little bit will make you Krishna conscious, that's all you need. If a lot is necessary, but then you have the capacity for that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. 426. All purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served by one who knows the purpose behind them. Right? So that's the whole point, is that you understand the purpose of it. Then you actually, because remember, purpose is the analytical aspect of sambandha of prayojana. Right? What's the purpose of the item or the interaction or, you know, like that? That's the purpose. Okay, so so here is that the great reservoir is understanding the purpose. So that's by Krishna's grace. That comes through devotional service. So that's how someone can have a great understanding of Krishna consciousness, but not be that scholarly. Because he takes what knowledge he does know, applies it in his life, and Krishna reveals himself. So that is the great reservoir. Like that. Does that make sense?
So this is like perfect knowledge is not necessarily quantity.
No, perfect is not quantity. Perfect is understanding the purpose. In other words, what Krishna said.
Is it also kind of saying, Arjuna, you're quoting Niti Shastra, Dharma Shastra, there's so many Vedas, surrender unto me. You know, this is that little well.
Yeah, well, here is, we're saying, it's saying the purpose of the Vedas can be served by one who knows the purpose behind. So all purpose is served by a small well. Right? Similarly, all purposes of the Vedas can at once be served by the great reservoir of water, can be served by one who knows the purpose behind them. So the great reservoir is the knowledge of the purpose of the Veda. In other words, the knowledge of the Veda, because that's being taken as what that is what's vast. But it's not. What's vast is the purpose of the Veda. And then, applying Krishna's point, is you only need how much you do. So that little bit of knowledge from the Veda, you understand the purpose, then you've understood everything. Right? Does that make sense? One who knows Krishna knows everything. Right? So somebody may have to study a lot of the Veda to apply in their life that Krishna will bless them with that understanding. And someone else, maybe very little they have to apply. Like you see that one Brahmin in South. He couldn't even read. He's sitting with the Gita, you know, upside down like that. But he's crying because he understands the purpose. Right? While all the ones laughing at him had vast amounts of understanding of the small well. Right? But he understood the great reservoir. That makes sense? Yeah, so Lord Chaitanya said he's the scholar. Right? Not everybody else. It doesn't mean that somebody can't have great knowledge of that, but that's just their ability. You know, like say Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had eidetic memory. So it means he looks at this page, he remembers that the rest of his life. Like that. You know, so then he can just go through, you know, what their method is. My mother had a friend like that. She just goes through the whole book, looks at each page. And then anytime she wants, she just goes through the pages. You know, in her mind, she just, you know, leafs through the book and, you know, looks for whatever it is she wants. So it's whatever it is, you know all that. You have that great vast amounts of knowledge. But that's you know, what particular facility you have. But it's Krishna's point is not what facility you have, it's what you do with the facility. Right? The person has 10 rupees, you know, and he gives 5 to Krishna. You know, that's something. But the other person has 1,000 rupees and he gives 10 rupees to Krishna. So it looks like he gave the bigger donation, but actually he gave the smaller donation. If he had given 500 rupees, then that would have been comparable to the other person's 5. You understand? But we're taking is it's what you do with it that's important for Krishna. But because Krishna is unlimited, he is everything, he's making it happen. So it's like, what are we going to do to impress him? You know what I'm saying? You know, so a little kid comes up on his little car with the little pedals on it, you know, up next to a Ferrari. And what's he going to do to impress him?
He's going to outrun it.
You know, it's not, so there's nothing we can do to impress Krishna. Right? So the point is, what impresses him is how we use it. Right? That's the point. Right? So that's the great reservoir. The ultimate purpose of all mysticism, of all Vedic mysticism, all mystic mysticism. I think it back. Mystic. Oh, I see. The TIC looks like the DIC. Okay. The rituals and sacrifices mentioned in the Karmakanda division of the Vedic literature are meant to encourage gradual development of self-realization. Right, so gradual, they're all meant that you'll be self-realized, because at some point you're going to ask, what's this for? You know? I mean, you should. That's the idea, but that's why it says gradual. It doesn't say how many thousands of lifetimes we're talking about here. And the purpose of self-realization is clearly stated in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 15:15. The purpose of studying the Vedas is to know Lord Krishna, the primeval cause of everything. 58. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So that's what we're supposed to know from all this.
The Vedas primarily were meant for people who are intellectuals, kind of, because the Brahmanas, like this Brahman who was illiterate, it's an exception, it's not the rule. And so we may say that if the person is more intellectually inclined, whatever, it will be easier for that particular person to be Krishna conscious?
Not necessarily. It's a matter of they're interested in being Krishna conscious. So because intellectual is a matter of contemplation. The point is that, but everybody is contemplating. You know? Like let's say, the unlimited consideration that the head cheerleader is thinking when she's walking with her groupies down the hall in the high school, who she's looking at, what she's wearing, what everybody else in the whole hallway is wearing, is vastly complex. That's why she's who she is, because she can do that. So she's contemplating, but it just has nothing to do with, you know, philosophy or anything. You know what I'm saying? So contemplation isn't a problem for everybody contemplates. You know, even the dog sits there and contemplates, you know, what you have over there. You know, it eats, you know. Like that. Does that make sense? Even it's covered, it can't see it, but it's still contemplating what it could be. You know, so contemplation is there. That anybody can do. And what we're talking about is having, you know, how you say, that ability to... No, it means everybody's studying their error. It's a matter of being able to study the academic knowledge. So if one has some ability in that, it will always make it easy. Because if the intelligence is cultivated to some degree, then it won't be purely on the sentiments that the mind will come up with, which is more dangerous. It means if they're connected to Krishna, then it's fine. Like, you know, the point being made about the gopis, they're not great scholars, but their mind is connected to Krishna, so that makes them the best devotees. Right? So it's a matter of contemplation. The academic ability is secondary. If someone has, it's quite useful, because then they can study the Shastra and won't become bewildered. But the Vedic system is such that even you don't have, someone else does. There's always someone who does, right? So, therefore, if they're studying more, and then they speak about this, and we associate with that, then we'll get the benefit. They sat, they studied, they contemplated, now they give you their understanding. So then, you didn't have to go through all that. You know what I'm saying? Like the Upanishads, they give all this analytical elements. You're supposed to take that, analyze it yourself, come to the conclusions. Right? But then, you know, Vedanta Sutra has already done that, you know. And then for that, then Bhagavatam has already done that. So Bhagavatam, then anybody can read. Does that make sense? So if one has, good. But if one doesn't, it doesn't matter as long as you associate with devotees and you're trying to be sincere and following the instruction of the spiritual master. If one's not doing that and one's not very intellectual, then it can be a very weak position. Right? Because then one's sentiment will carry it, because you're distracted, into fruitive activities. And the fruitive activities, you know, even if they're pious, they're distracting, let alone impious. You know? So self-realization means understanding Krishna and one's eternal relationship with him. That's what we're looking at. So that can be whether one has vast, you know, academic knowledge or not, everybody can do that. The relationship of the living entities with Krishna is also mentioned in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 5.7. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Right? So the five senses and the mind. That's what they're struggling with. So that was what, remember, what Manu was focused on. He didn't get into all the other elements. He just got into these, because that's what you work with.
Yeah.
The senses bring in information, the mind makes a decision on what you do with that information. Right? And it may use the intelligence in the process, but it's still the mind and the senses. Like that. The living entities are parts and parcels of Krishna. Therefore, revival of Krishna consciousness by the individual living entity is the highest perfectional stage of Vedic knowledge. Vedanta is the last word in Vedic wisdom, and the author and knower of the Vedanta philosophy is Lord Krishna. And the highest Vedantist is the great soul who takes pleasure in chanting the holy name of the Lord. That is the ultimate purpose of all Vedic mysticism. Right? So what conclusion is given by all these great analytical shastras is that one should chant Hare Krishna. As we will find as we go through. Where is that? Yeah, I think it's in the second half. It's in the third part. So then, No, that first part's in the beginning. Yeah, I think we'll like in the third chapter or something. It's making the point that, maybe earlier, that the Brahmin who is chanting japa, he actually is the best. So he's actually attained the conclusion of all the Vedic literatures. Like that. That's also mom. Mm-hmm. Not just losing fingers and noses. Okay, so that's the purpose of it. So there's just various ways. Rituals and sacrifice mentioned are meant to encourage gradual development. So in other words, if somebody's just into fruitive elements, there's something to gradually take him forward. If he's only into academic, then there's something to gradually take him forward. But either of them only become actually fruitful when you associate with devotees. Because that's the underlying point. You are pious, you're doing the rituals, but the idea is that since you have to do that with the direction of Brahmins, if somehow or another you're sincere, the Brahmins that come to do those things will be Vaishnavas. Then you'll understand its connection with the Lord. Or if you're an intellectual, you're looking at that, you've studied all the Vedas, you've studied all the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, and that, you're actually sincere, then you come across devotee scholars who will then show you how to connect that to the Lord. That's the point. So it comes to its perfection in the association of devotees. Right? So again, taking us back to the point is in the association of devotees. Somehow or another, if a fortunate man gets the opportunity of associating with a saintly devotee, he gets the chance of hearing and chanting the holy name of Godhead. By this process, the devotee is liberated from all mundane influence, and only in this state of purity can one be situated in the spiritual nature. So 247. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action, right? Everything's always balanced. You can do your duty. No one can say you can't do your duty, but the results are not yours.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. To me it does. But for a materialist, it sounds like the opposite of what you want.
Yes.
But anyways.
Yes, means you're entitled to the fruits of action, but you don't have to do your prescribed duty. That would be
sounds
the,
good.
That's the motto, right? You know, people get out there and fight for that. You know? Okay. Never consider yourself the cause or the results of your activities, right? Because we're only an instrument. And never be attached to not doing your duty, right? If there's a situation where you can't do the duty, when the opportunity is there, don't be attached to not doing it.
Just to make sure.
Yeah. So Krishna is getting all sides here. You have a right to perform your duty. The results aren't used. Don't think that you've caused the results, right? Because you will think, I did the work, so therefore the result's mine. But no, you assisted in the work, and because you only assisted whoever you were assisting, it's theirs. Right? You know, you're cutting the sabji and then someone else cooked. Then everyone goes, wow, this is a great sabji. And then you go, yeah, but I cut the vegetables. If I hadn't cut it, he couldn't have cooked it. So actually, you know, hey. Right?
Yeah.
That's the funny thing. They're so absurd, but we do it all the time, right? Okay. Performance of duties is the only auspicious path of salvation. Work with results becomes the cause of bondage, right? Because results means you're working for results. It doesn't mean that your work got a result, therefore you're bound. Right? Therefore, such work is not auspicious. Everyone has his propitiatory right in regard to prescribed duties, but should act without attachment to the results. Because if you act according to the attachment, you're bound. You act without attachment, then you're freed. Right? Such disinterested, obligatory duties doubtlessly lead one to the path of liberation. Right? Disinterested doesn't mean you're disinterested in the process. It means you're disinterested in the result being for you. Right? Because many might get disturbed. Disinterested, obligatory, these are all very dry. Right? Disinterested, there's no relationship. Obligatory, you don't actually want to be doing it. You know? That would be your thing. So therefore, it means you're insensitively performing work that you don't want to do. That would be the modern interpretation of this. But disinterested means it's not for you. It's obligatory because that's your nature. You're going to do it anyway. So you might as well agree to do it.
Yeah.
You know? Is that because you agree it's much easier. You have to clean up your room. It takes you 5 minutes. But you don't want to clean your room. You'll sit there for 55 minutes grumbling about it. Right? And suffering. And then finally you'll have to clean it up. But you won't do that great of a job. But then your hour's gone. And now it's time for homework. Right? You know, so... Right?
Sound familiar?
Yeah. So the point is you have to do it anyway, so might as well happily do it. Right? Arjuna was therefore advised by the Lord to fight as a matter of duty without attachment to the result. Right? As duty means that you're supposed to do it. Because nowadays we think, oh, his duty is like that. But if you go back in time, you know, when things are a bit more romantic, then it was like, you know, it's a duty, you know, we have a duty to, you know, man and our country or to the family or the community or, you know, something. And so, you know, our friends. So then it's an inspiration. That's why you're doing it, because of that feeling. So that's the point. It's our duty and how to serve God. We can do this to please the Lord. You know, so it doesn't have to be dry. You know, we make it dry.
So the modern concept of not having a duty, that actually means that nobody's and nothing is depending on you, so nobody cares. And I mean,
it means the point is it falls because you're obligated and you do it. Therefore, the other person feels obligated. Yeah. But if you're not obligated, why should I be obligated?
All value just
everything disappears. But we think it's no. Only I'll take advantage of it. You know, it means that you have the concepts there in the Western. You have that one. I'm not sure whose it was. Is it Dr. Seuss? You had the
green eggs in hand.
No, it wasn't green eggs in hand. It wasn't sand. It was something that it was a day when everybody got out and made as much noise as possible. Right, and so then one person. I'm getting worried here. You have a day like that over there when everyone gets out there. Okay. So everybody makes as much noise as possible, bangs on, you know, trash can lids, blows horns, does this, that, anything to make noise. So one kid thought, wow, you know, I'm so busy making the noise, I can't enjoy all the noise. So he decided, I'll just watch. And then, you know, somehow another discussion, you know, he was talking about that and his friends got like this. And then when the day came for to make all noise stopped. It was perfectly quiet. And everyone was like shocked, you know, silence, you know. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the, not sure how we got into that.
There's so that was like doing your duty or not doing your duty.
Yeah, but so it was something to do with.
All value disappears.
Yeah, all value disappears. So everybody, no one does it, so you end up with nothing there. So
I would prefer that day. I mean, I'm just saying.
The birds are too noisy here.
No. But banging.
Oh, that's another thing.
Anyway.
Yes. As already explained, didn't get it. Where are we? We're on this side. Okay. Arjuna was therefore advised by the Lord to fight as a matter of duty. No, I just saw it over here. Only misers desire to enjoy the fruit of their work just to be further entangled in material bondage, right? So now instead of being attached to noise, he's attached to peace. So.
Yeah.
Like that. So there's a weakness in that.
True.
Okay. His non-participation in the battle is another side of attachment. Such attachment never leads one to the path of salvation, right? Because he's attached to enjoying the results, right? Because the idea was the war is there, you'll get results. He wants to enjoy those results. He won't enjoy those results, so he'll go to the forest. Right? Such attachment never leads one to the path of salvation. Any attachment, positive or negative, is cause for bondage. Because we have this idea, if it's negative, oh, I'm so useless, I'm so disgusting, I'm so this, I'm so that. That somehow or another that's spiritual. But no, that's just, it means you're going to get, inaction is sinful, right? Yeah. So you're going to end up doing nothing. Therefore, fighting as a matter of duty was the only auspicious path of salvation for Arjuna. 60. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 7.7.48. As far as economic development is concerned, we should discharge our occupational duties, but fully depend on the lotus feet of the Lord for the results. Karmanyevadikaraste maafaleshu kadachana. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. According to one's position, one should perform his duties. Before the results, one should fully depend on Krishna. Narottam Das Thakur sings that our only desire should be to perform the duties of Krishna consciousness. We should not be misled by the Karma Mimamsa philosophy, which concludes that if we work seriously, the results will come automatically. This is not a fact, because they're saying, you work, therefore you get the results. No, it's you work and Krishna gives the results, because Paramatma has to sanction. Right? So, he's the one that gave, you work in this way, you get the result, but it's still, the result is coming because he sanctions it, because you did what he said. You understand? But they'll say, no, I did the work and the result came, therefore my work got the result.
So karma mimamsas, they don't even really believe in karma, real karma. Because if it has to be sanctioned, that means we have to have the karma for it. But if they say the work itself gets the job done and gets the result,
yeah,
then whoever
yeah,
does.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it would be, but it's called karma mimamsa.
Mm.
That's their philosophy. It's just like Mayavadis, that's what they call themselves.
Yeah.
You know, like the guy would say, yeah, you're Hare Krishna. So, we call ourselves Hare Krishnas. You know, so, you know, he uses it in a derogatory way, but. You know what I'm saying? Sahajiyas, that's what they call themselves. Right? Because in their mind, sahaj means the easy path. You know, everyone is taking the hard path. We're taking the easy path. Right? We're smart. So it's the same thing.
Okay.
Right? So. Okay. But the automatic, it's not a fact. It's still the Lord's sanction, then you get it. Because automatic means without anything else, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The ultimate result depends upon the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In devotional service, therefore, the devotee completely depends upon the Lord and honestly performs his occupational duties. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj advised his friends to depend completely on Krishna and worship him in devotional service. Right? Because otherwise, before, he was presenting that you do all these auspicious things, but still, that's not going to make you happy. That's not actually, it's serving the Lord is going to do that. Right? Because otherwise, then they're doing all these things recommended in scriptures. We have to remember, Prahlad was going to a gurukul. That's recommended. He was being taught by Brahmins. The Brahmins were, you know, the, how you say, sons of Sukracharya. So it means, you know, they're not ordinary, you know, just some guys off the street. Right? So the point is, it's connect. You please Krishna, so devotional service, trying to please Krishna, automatically gets the results, because the point is that's what Krishna wants you to do. So those results will automatically come. But the karma mimamsa, he's thinking the automatic is I did the work, therefore it comes. No, it's automatic. You do the work Krishna says you should do, then you'll get a good result. Because Krishna is the one that set the work, and he's the one that gives the result. So it's automatic that if you do the work prescribed, you get the result. Right? But it's not because you did the work, you're automatically getting the result. That's where karma mimamsa misses it. You understand? That's all it takes to go wrong in the philosophy, to go from bona fide to bogus. Because otherwise you're performing pious activities according to the Veda, according to, you know, the Acharya, like that. You know, you understand, you know, pious work, you're doing everything right, you understand that the Lord is there, he's sanctioning and all these different things. But the problem is you think, because I did the work, the Lord has to sanction it, right? Rather than, you know, then it's his free will to sanction it, right? But he's not whimsical. So he will sanction it, but it's not automatic. That because I did the work, I get it. It's the Lord's free will that you do this work, I'll give you this result. You understand?
So that confirms what you stated before, that the different systems are basically one misconception from the real...
Yeah. That's like what Prabhupada says, you do a big mathematical calculation, get one calculation wrong. Maybe all the others are correct, but that one being wrong, you'll get the wrong conclusion. So it's the same thing. So the all these Vedic ones, they're starting with the... That's why they're one more difficult to understand, because they're more technical. But at the same time, they're more consistent, because they're based on the Veda. But there's something wrong there. So that wrongness is what is taken by all these other systems, though they don't necessarily take the technicalities. So they're not mechanically very developed. But they'll take this thing as, well, whatever I do, then that's what, you know, or whatever I feel like, that's what's right, that's what's truth. You know, stuff like that. They just take part of something and then try to, you know, make a whole. Does that make sense? Yeah. 248. Perform your duty equipoised, O Arjuna, abandoning all attachment to success or failure. Such equanimity is called yoga. Right? So attachment to success or failure. It means for ourselves. We're trying to get the result for Krishna. So whenever Krishna sanctions it, it will come. Mm-hmm. So that means we're going to work however long it takes to get it. Because we're only doing these things to please Krishna, right? So, and it's done through devotional service. So being active in Krishna consciousness is what we want to do. Mm-hmm. So when the result comes, it's not finished, then we'll do something else. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yoga means to concentrate the mind upon the Supreme by controlling the senses. Krishna tells Arjuna that he should act in yoga. And what is that yoga? Yoga means to concentrate the mind upon the Supreme by controlling the ever-disturbing senses. And who is the Supreme? The Supreme is the Lord. And because he himself is telling Arjuna to fight, Arjuna has nothing to do with the results of the fight. Gain or victory are Krishna's concern. Arjuna is simply advised to act according to the dictation of Krishna. Right? So that means prescription of how to perform the duties. The following of Krishna's dictation is real yoga. And this is practiced in the process called Krishna consciousness. Okay, so the dictation, then you practice that, that's called Krishna consciousness. Right? So it's not just the philosophy or just the application, a combination. By Krishna consciousness only can one give up the sense of proprietorship. Right? Because otherwise, I and mine goes all the way back to the platform of Vasudeva Sattva. You know, before again you fall into the next creation. Right? So only Krishna consciousness can go beyond that. One has to become the servant of Krishna, or the servant of the servant of Krishna. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 1380. That is the right way to discharge duty in Krishna consciousness, which alone can help one to act in yoga. So again, coming back to the point of taking advantage of the association of devotees and following their instructions. So, footnote 61. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana writes in his commentary to 248. Krishna says, giving up desires for results, and giving up thoughts of being the doer, being situated in yoga, perform such duties as fighting. By desiring results, you become entangled in Maya. And by thinking yourself the doer, you steal the quality of independence which belongs to the Lord. By this identity as a doer, you end up in opposition to the Lord's Maya. Therefore, you should give up these two conceptions. Okay. By desiring the results, you're entangled by Maya, and by thinking you're the doer, then you're taking the quality of the Lord. And then you're opposed to Maya, because she's subservient to Maya. I mean, to Krishna. Right? And you don't want to go up to her, against her. She's one quarter of the cosmic manifestation. So she's big. House always wins.
Yes.
This
quality of independence. Every aspect of the quality of independence to belong to Krishna. Or do the
it means Krishna is the independent one. We have the quality of independence of choosing whether to work under Krishna or not. But that the work itself got done. That we didn't have anything to do with.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, you weren't here yesterday. You know, I didn't see it. Oh, I went to Calcutta. No, the bus took you to Calcutta. The guy driving the bus got you to Calcutta.
Yes.
Right? You know, and the city arranged that. So actually, the transport minister got you to Calcutta. But I'll say I got to went to Calcutta because I made the choice to get on the bus. Mm-hmm. Right, so I'll attribute myself with the. So as far as culturally goes, that's fine. But the point is that we think I'm the doer, then we're not actually. We can only decide to take part in the process. That's our independence. That's why it says our independence is minute.
Yes.
But Krishna's is unlimited because he's the one that actually makes it work. So it's his independence that he said, if you do this sacrifice, then you go to this heavenly planet. But that's his free will to do that. So you follow it, then you go to that heavenly planet. Yeah. Does that make sense? But it's his free will. So we're not the doer like that. Yeah, Krishna's the doer. Right, on this level. But the reason that those things are happening is because we identify as the doer. Therefore, the reaction of it comes to us. We say the result's ours. But what we're looking for is only the good result. We're not looking for the bad result. Right? The person stole money. So he's looking for the good result of having the money and, you know, enjoying himself. He's not looking for the bad result of the police catching him and putting him in jail. Right? But the point is that he gets it all. Right? So the point is, what one works for Krishna, then one is not a thief. Right? Something from the forest, it belongs to God. So if that's taken and used for service to God, where is the stealing? Right? If I go to somebody's house, and in their house use something from the kitchen to cook something for them, you're not a thief. But if I go to the kitchen and cook something for myself, you understand? Like that. So that's the thing. The duty doesn't change, the activity, it's the consciousness. Oh, Dhananjaya, keep all abominable action far distant by devotional service, and in that consciousness surrender unto the Lord. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their work are misers. Except for work in Krishna consciousness, all activities are abominable. So that also then answers our other question. You know, what is abominable action? So abominable action means anything that's not Krishna conscious. You know what I'm saying? So that's all. You know, it means something's dirty, it's dirty. You know, you can have more dirty, less dirty, but you know, but we'll take it that, oh, this activity not in Krishna consciousness is abominable, but this activity not in Krishna consciousness is okay. You know what I'm saying? So it can be applied wherever, you know, like that. One who has actually come to understand one's constitutional position as an eternal servant of the Lord gives up all engagements save working in Krishna consciousness. As already explained, Buddha Yoga means transcendental loving service to the Lord. Such devotional service is the right course of action for the living entity. So this engagement of our conditioning, of using the body, mind, and words, so the meditation of focus on Krishna, the senses being engaged, the intelligence understanding what's the best way to do something, that's being used for Krishna, that's Buddha Yoga. Right? So that's devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? So we're defining on that level. We're not saying, in this case, only prema is devotional service. No, okay, you're applying your conditioning to Krishna, it's devotional service. Right? Then pure devotional service means it's free from karma and jnana. So there may be devotional service, it may have some mix, but it's not pure devotional service. Pure devotional service means you advance, that's removed. Such devotional service is the right course of action for the living entity. Only misers desire to enjoy the fruit of their own work, just to be further entangled in material bondage. Right. Except for work in Krishna consciousness, all activities are abominable, because they continually bind the worker to the cycle of birth and death. One should therefore never desire to be the cause of work. Right. That I'm the doer, right? So that's the other. You desire the results, then you're bound. Right? And then if you think that I'm the one who's doing it, you're also bound. Everything should be done in Krishna consciousness for the satisfaction of Krishna. Yeah. So either way, you want the result, then the karma, or you think I'm the doer, or I'm the controller, and I'm the enjoyer. The result's mine, I'm the enjoyer. I'm the one who's doing the work, I'm the controller. Right? So these two are always mentioned because these two are what we like to do. Right? In other words, why mention something that you don't do wrong? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it's like if I always, you know, there's no need for me to tell you to, you know, don't leave the keys laying around for the yacht. Is there any need? No, there's no yacht, so therefore there's no. So the point is you make a point according to what applies. So that we always think we're the controller and enjoyer, it's always mentioned over and over again from different ways, because this is what we do do. You know, like that. That's the.
And it's like a theme. Like a theme.
Yes, like a theme. Yeah. So that's so, but different angles. Like it means we look at it, analyze it. It's again saying controller and enjoyer. But we'll think, oh, well, you know, it's just, okay, we just heard that over here about being, you know, it means if you're attached to the results, you get bound. And if you think you're the doer of it, then the results are yours, therefore the reaction's yours, so you're bound. Right? You're bound by the attachment, you're bound by the implication in the work. Right? In other words, the result, you're attached to the result, you're bound by that. You know, I'm the one doing it, then you're bound in the works of it. The workings of it. Does that make sense? You know, like Manuel mentioned, an offense on the platform or an activity performed on the platform of the mind, the result will be gained in the mind. Right? Something done with the intelligence is gained in intelligence. Something done with the body is gained in body. Does that make sense? Like you speak something, the reaction for that will come by speaking. You know, like the guy just before he runs over you, the guy leans out of the window of the Mack truck and says, "Hey, move out of the way." And then he runs you over. So, you know, it came by sound. Right? But you can understand, just like this, we're talking about something that just doesn't fit into the paradigm. You know? So we're discussing with a Buddhist brain, and then we say it just doesn't calculate, right? So in the same way as with us, this idea that we're not the controller and enjoyer does not compute. You know, so we're thinking, you know, so many different things. So, you know, it's always saying the same thing. It's like we don't catch it because it's you know, because if we catch it, it means we have to surrender, right? You know, we're not the controller and enjoyer anymore.
Hey, Matt. These two ideas are always together.
Yeah, they're always together. So you always see that sambandha and prayojana always go together, right? You know, abhideya will be according to what that is. I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, the abhideya is material. I'm the servant, the results for Krishna, the abhideya is devotional service. Yes. So that's why you only need to focus really on those two. Does that make sense? So one should never desire to be the cause of work. Right? So desire, that's a prajumna, right? And then the cause of work, right? So that's the prayojana. In a sense, you only have to mention these two. Everything should be done in Krishna consciousness, right? For the satisfaction of Krishna. So here, the activity is there, and the results for Krishna. So then you're bringing out devotional service is the thing, because devotional service means your identity is connected with Krishna and the results of Krishna. Right? If identity is connected with Krishna, it's devotional service. The results of Krishna, it becomes pure devotional service. Right? So by being situated in devotional service, then the other two are automatically there. Right? Because if you're doing material activities, means you have these two wrong. Right. So in analyzation, generally we only have to analyze these two, because we either have it wrong in, you know, our identity or who's doing it or who the result's for. That's where the main problems are. If we've accepted those, devotional service isn't a big step. You know, that's not the difficult thing, because the activity will be exactly the same, right? It's that I'm the controller and enjoyer, or I'm the servant, and there is a results for Krishna. That's the big step. That's where Prabhupada says there's a vast difference. It means in that consciousness. But the activity looks exactly the same. Is that Fifty-one. A man engaged in devotional service rids himself of both good and bad reactions, even in this life. Because good reactions will keep you here also.
Yeah.
You know? Like that.
This is part of anartha nivritti?
Anartha, because you have to give up good and bad. Because otherwise, well, Johnny, think anartha, get rid of all the bad stuff. No, it means get rid of the attachment to the good. Doesn't mean you get rid of, you know, I'm good at something. It means to get rid of the attachment to it. Right?
So the last stages of anartha nivritti after bhava, the results on pious activities.
Yes.
Yeah,
they're burnt up, because the gopis couldn't go to the rasa dance because of residue pious activities. So only when that's gone, then they could go. Because it has to be its only devotional service, otherwise it's not. Because here is, we will take those, there's always absorbed in Krishna. But the point is the standard of always absorbed is more focus than that absorption that those particular gopis were in. You know? It means they're always thinking about Krishna, but it's focused where it's samadhi. That wasn't obtained. Right? So coming to samadhi means it's only on Krishna. That means everything else is burnt up. Right? Then one is qualified. Right? You know, like Mother Jashoda, she was doing something for Krishna. But Krishna still got upset because she was personally interacting, and then she stopped to go do something for him. You know what I'm saying? So there's the difference in doing something for something and directly interacting with them. Right? So on that level, he could feign being upset. But he's not actually upset because she's doing it for him. But, you know, it's one of those more notable pastimes. Is that? Therefore, strive for yoga, which is the art of all work. Because yoga means you actually connecting it. So you have the, then you. So that is the art of all work. By thus engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world. Right? Results meaning, as I said, good and bad. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries by going back to Godhead. Okay. So, we'll stop here for... And we'll continue. With the Manu. Yes.
Feedback from that idea about shortening the morning. You talk to a few people?
I spoke to a few people. It's from all the spectrum, basically. There are some that think that we should actually have less break and we should just go on with the full class as we are now and just focus. There was a suggestion that we could have, like, in the winter time, 5-10 minute break, and that would actually clear up, you know, the concentration gap. Then there are some on the other spectrum that would really like that we cut the first class short and make the break bigger, especially the Matsukis and on the Grihastha side. So it's, I think, you know, from who I asked, it was equally basically from both sides. Maybe a little more on the side of cutting the first class short.
Well, the other is that if it means you can run it straight through, is that we could go from 7 to 10 and just take a 10-minute break in the middle. Then you could have both things and run straight through. And then you're done for the morning. You know, but the thing is that the consideration is, you know, how you say, if there's other obligations in that. So people who don't have other obligations, and they'd like it to all be done at one time.
Exactly.
And those who have other obligations, you get, in other words, that half hour makes a lot of difference in what you can get done. Yeah.
Because we have until the 20th of April, we have 5 weeks, so that's 20 days of full lectures, and then from then and until the Shinga Chaturdashi, we have 2 weeks where we can have, as far as I understood, one class per day.
Yeah,
so that's like 20 full days and 8 days of one class. Mm. And we have quite something to finish.
Yeah, that's them. But the idea of checking this is, if this can work, then we would use the schedule in the winter. And so then, because the philosophy is going to go through, that's not as much the worry, because that's designed to fit into there. The difficulty is this Bhaktivinoda, it's fitting. Because it was originally designed to fit into the same amount of time. You know, it was also supposed to get the 108 days of class, like that. But then, you know, we tried to do it some other ways, and this and that, and it hasn't worked, so now we're going back the other way to see if it...
Yeah. Obligation, Maharaj, that is pretty universal.
The?
Prashadam. Obligation.
Yeah.
Breakfast, prashadam.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a problem to go all the way through the hot... Prashadam was only available from, say, the Brahmachari kitchen or somewhere else around 9 o'clock.
See, but that's the Brahmacharis have a problem, because the Grihasthas could eat at 6 o'clock and be at 7 and be happy and sit here until 10, no problem. So that's what I was saying, is that there's always going to be these these considerations.
Seems like we just have to leave it.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like we just have to leave it.
Yeah. Same time, as I think you gain more by the shortening, because the thing is because unless I'm, what I'm worried is that, like in here, is there's more of devotees falling asleep. You know what I'm saying? Well, if you have that extra time, they could even take a nap, or it's just there's more variety of things to do, the mind will refresh itself. Mm-hmm. But here in the hour and a half, it's not that much that you actually do that. Mm-hmm. But it's a problem for those who, you know, come over here, sit here, eat their breakfast here, and then to sit another half an hour here, that'll be a problem. But for those who go back and all that, then it's... So you have that element is also there. And just, you know, we'll just have to wait till they say Brahmachari ashram for these guys. Then they can do 6 to 8, 10 to 12, and 4 to 6. And they get it 6 hours a day, like that, with proper break, and it'll be right there. They don't have to go anywhere, and we'll work the breakfast around that. So, but until then we have to work it out between the Brahmacharis, the Grihasthas, and the boys' school.
So, what's the decision?
Practical person, we're going to let it slip away.
We almost made it.
Hey, wait a minute.
So break from 8:30 till, there's also the option 8:30 until 10, or 8:30 until 10:30.
Yeah, well, but the one is that you gain the benefit of, by shorter, that the focus being good, you don't lose it, but the gap doesn't then... It means, in other words, it would do better for the first class, but it wouldn't add anything to the second, like that. So by having the second stay in the same place, and the first be a little shorter, then that gap being bigger is, the concentration will be more in the first class, though you won't get as that extra half an hour of information, but I think the percentage of the brain working is a little less. You know, you have to understand, this is from watching all of you, because for me, a 2.5 hour class, as one class with no break, for me is a good standard block to get something done. So the consideration is what works for you guys. You know, because you're 7 to that, I start class at 6, you know, and then we go. You know what I'm saying? So that was the... So, consideration is that 1.5 hours, the focus is more, you get more out of it. And then by having the bigger break, we'll get more out of this class. So overall, it would even out that even though less time is there, we would get an equal amount, but it would be less, how you say, strenuous. So the mind will have more of an aspect of accepting it. You know what I'm saying? Because you always have to watch the mind. Just like when you have, not that this compares, but just to give an example, is that, I mean, you know, 2 weeks before the exams, you know, I'm talking about the smart ones. You know, 2 weeks before the exams, you start, you know, just studying, and cramming, you know, like that. And then you do the test, you get good marks on the test, but 2 weeks after that, you could ask them this question, they wouldn't even know what you're talking about. Like, because the mind just rejects it. Like, I noticed on the, you know, it's like, let's say, enthusiastic one to learn shloka, so you take a shloka and, you know, memorize that today, you know, you know, we'll always work out, so, you know, it's always got to be one shloka a day, you know, like that, you know. I don't know that anybody gets past a month. Mostly it's less, but whatever it is. Because the mind just can't handle that pressure. But like on the Vedic method, the South Indian Vedic method of learning the shlokas, these boys know hundreds and hundreds of shlokas. But they don't even technically even know that they know them. It's only because they can chant them that they realize that. Because there was no pressure on putting that in. You just spent the time, but there was no pressure. It's just a different, so that consideration is there, but we have to find an optimum because there is a volume. You know what I'm saying? Because for me, ideal would be at least 3 2-hour blocks, you know, but it's not going to happen because of the because with the boys' school, like I said, you know, 6 to 8, 10 to 12, and 4 to 6. That would be, for me, good, you know, it's not going to work. So this I think would get the maximum time with the maximum results. Does that make sense? So, you know, it's 4 hours instead of 6 hours. So it's a compromise, but I think it'll work.
You're training yourself, we're building up our concentration and our momentum.
Yeah. Because the thing is, as we go, there'll be more volume of stuff to deal with, so that the extra time that'll work better, we have stuff to deal with. Like now, it's like we, you know, a chapter of Gita every few weeks, but in the Bhagavatam level, it's 2 chapters a week. But actually, 2 chapters isn't a lot of material to read. You know, you sit down in 45 minutes, read 1 chapter. It's just getting the mind to agree to do that. So an hour and a half per week, you know, reading is not actually that much. It's just getting the mind used to it, that's all. Because that's the idea, is because we have to get through 2 chapters a week, on average. Some chapters go quicker, some will be slower, you know, depending on what they are. But Preeti, in going through with the boys, he says that you could, so in some areas you could do 2 chapters a day. Some chapters, you know, just chronology of names and stuff like that. So it's just, but you have an average of, you have to do 54 chapters a year. Then in 6 years you've done the full Bhagavatam.
So next year
already
Bhagavatam?
No, next year is year after.
Okay.
I'm saying is that, like, this year is easier for going through and studying and everything. So next year will be like the conclusion of all this, where we go through the Jiva Dharma. And then we go technically into all the 6 schools. Because we did it before, but no one had any idea this technical of our own philosophy. So, you know, it was nice, but, you know, now we'll be able to appreciate what are those 6 schools. Right? Because, and that is just so we have a general idea, because then when we're doing the second 6 chapters of Bhagavatam, we'll study Vedanta Sutra, which is the, you know, in-depth study of the 6.
Second six canto.
Yeah.
And next year we will also have something on other philosophies, or?
Yeah, that's the 6 schools.
No, but also Islam, Christianity, or?
That we have modern. To see. That technically it depends upon where we put that, if that falls in the Bhakti Mucha or falls in here. Because within the histories and all that, that would come there. So how much? There'll be something. Because the Tattva Vivek deals with that. but how much, you know, the whole history of it and this and that. Like, you know, if we're going to get into that, it's in the third ecumenical council of the Christianity that the East Orthodox and the Catholicism split from each other because of over on how God is Jesus.
Mm.
You know, because that's what the whole thing is. It's like, is he God, God, or is he God meaning, you know, Son of God? That's the whole difference between East Orthodox and Roman Catholic. Is that one major point. You know, so like that, then you get that's so those kind of things and who was there and, you know. I think one of them took 30 years, right? And,
you can imagine what he could have done.
Yeah. So you can imagine, you know, Vaishnav scholars sitting for 30 years having discussions. You get a lot done. They only came to the conclusion that, okay, we're going to split the church into two because this half thinks that he is God and these think he's, you know, Son of God. You know, stuff like that.
Well, now we covered that.
Right. And then you had, you know, and then before that, then about 60... Yeah, about 60 A.D., then there's the split on whether it's worthwhile worrying about Jesus or not. No, I'm just saying because the histories and that, because the histories... See, so what we have to remember is history is written, I mean, it's modern history, what we learn is secular. So that means religion is always left out. The religious considerations are left out. They'll say that you know, the Catholics and Protestants were fighting. But they'll never bring out that one of the reasons of the French Revolution was people were tired of 100 years of direct fighting between the Catholics and the Protestants. Mm. And I forget which side Louis was supporting.
Mm.
But whatever it was the wrong side. And so because of that, then there was the revolution. They make it sound like the oppression, this, that. They've been oppressed for the last 2,000 years. You know, and so that wasn't, they were pretty much used to that. But at least in your oppression, you know what happened day to day.
Mm.
But in this situation, just because you were a Catholic or Protestant, you walk down the street, it's got nothing to do with the government. Just people come along and kill you, right? There were these massacres where they just killed hundreds of thousands of people just because they were one denomination or the other. So this aspect won't be brought out in the modern history that this was a great influence on why there was the revolution. They're saying, so when you add religion and philosophy to the history, it takes on a whole different perspective. Very, very much. It's very interesting. So that's all part of, in that degree, it's part of the Bhakti Nitya. No, yeah, because it's boring, it's dry. Because anything that is of interest to the living entity is not included. Yeah. We have to remember is that all through history, people are killing themselves over religion. You know, Joan of Arc went out and got herself killed because of religion, not because, you know, something else. So, you know, so all these things are happening because of that. You know, the whole revolution in England is simply because of religion. Right? You know, Catholicism didn't allow divorce, so therefore start a new religion that does. Does that make sense? So those are the parts that are interesting. And so that gets left out. Because then the problem comes is, well, who said you're going to write it from? You know, so simple.
Yeah.
Hours.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Janitai Gaur.